Ah, yes, risk and reward. In filmmaking, television making, entertainment making, really, they are a fact of life. And you know, for every blockbusting, mind-blowing, ceiling-piercing, moment-making movie that we see, there are hundreds, probably thousands, that nobody notices. But man, when you are part of something that is so great and beautiful and big that the entire world embraces it, that is pretty special stuff. I myself have never experienced that. Of course, we all know that. But here on the sofa, we know people who do. This is episode 5 of Burning Sofa. I'm Betsy D, and man, have we got a moment for you. Burners, today I am thrilled and delighted to bring you a crazy, wonderful interview with one of the brilliant minds behind Crazy Rich Asians. This is the accomplished set decorator, Andrew Baseman. Hey, Andrew, how are you?
Hello, Betsy. I'm good. How are you doing?
Doing all right, thank you. I'm seeing that you're enjoying good weather over there in the Catskills.
It's beautiful out here, yes.
But before we get started, I just want to brag on behalf of the inspired and inspiring Mr. Baseman here. Over a few years in film, television, and theater, you've pretty much covered the gamut of concepts and moods from the deep and disturbing darkness of the TV series Mindhunter by the impossibly brilliant David Fincher. Anybody who's ever seen that would probably still having nightmares, to the gritty, phantasmagorical Gotham, and then all the way over to the film adaptation of Lin-Manuel Miranda's brilliant Broadway musical In the Heights, with a surprise left turn with the film Trial of the Chicago 7, which we will get to see later this year. And that is, of course, about Abbie Hoffman, Jerry Rubin, and the other activists in the 60s. And we're going to discuss all of those great things next week. But right now, we get to live vicariously through Andrew as he gives us a peek behind the Versace curtains of one of the most popular films of the decade. Andrew, we are so happy you could spend a little time with us today. You've got quite the list of accomplishments. So today we're just going to focus on one, and that is Crazy Rich Asians. Yay. Want to talk all about that. This, of course, is the rom-com of the century, where it takes place in Singapore, and it is, as the title says, it is all about some outrageously wealthy people, written by Kevin Kwan. And for this brilliant work that you and your team put together, the movie won the Critics' Choice Award for Best Comedy in 2019, and you and your production designer, Nelson Coates, won the Art Directors Guild Award for Production Design. Nicely done.
Thank you. Yes, very exciting. It's nice to be rewarded for hard work.
Oh, and boy, did it ever pay off. We all loved it. So can't wait to jump in. So, Andrew, tell us about the moment when the giant finger of fate pointed at you.
I was finishing up my third season of Gotham. And I got a call from Nelson Coates, who's a wonderful production designer who I worked with twice before. And he called me and said, would you like to come to Malaysia and Singapore and work on a movie? We are in production now. We had a decorator who was here for 2 weeks and got sick and went home.
Oof.
And I said, well, not really. I said, I like working in New York, but let me think about it. And then I hung up and thought about it for like 5 minutes, maybe 2 minutes, and called him up and said, yes, of course. Like, what was I thinking? Of course I'll go to the other end of the world and make a movie.
Yeah, let me think about this. Yes.
And I hadn't read the script. I didn't know anything about it. I just thought, after 3 seasons of dark, dreary sets on Gotham, you know, every set was cloudy and rainy and dark and gritty, and I enjoyed it, but it was still like time for something different. And this was the opposite. This was colorful and bright and sunny and a romantic comedy. And a week and a half later, I was on my way to Malaysia. Nelson said there was a great crew waiting for me. I wasn't able to bring anybody. Actually, that's not true. I was able to bring a lead man, but I couldn't find anyone on such short notice to leave everything and fly to Malaysia.
Can I ask, why was everything so compressed?
Because that's our business.
Oh.
That is one of the frustrations of making movies, that to save money, they don't give you a lot of prep time. They tighten the shooting schedule and have many, you know, many sets dressing, shooting at once, and just to save money. I forget how many days, it's an incredibly short shoot, how many days we did on Crazy Rich Asians. I remember the director just couldn't believe how fast he had to work.
And that director is John Chu.
John right? Chu, who is an amazing, wonderful, talented person who I did In the Heights with. And I have a text from him saying he wants me to work on every project he does. So wow. That was exciting. When I got there, my first day, jet lagged and stumbling around, I got to the office and saw, you know, hundreds and hundreds of research pictures broken up by set and the locations. And I just was absorbing it like a sponge, just because I'd never done this, even though it was contemporary. It was very specific world. It wasn't quite Chinese. You know, Peranakin.
Oh, yes, you inspired me to look that up, Andrew. Peranakin refers to people of mixed Chinese and Malay heritage, right? And when we first see this in the film is...
Well, this is the party at their house, when they first go to the house and they meet the boyfriend in white and that huge place. So that was furnished in the Peranakin style, and that's using heavily carved antiques and English wallpaper, very lush and lavish. And so that was a style that was so specific. They have museums in Malaysia and Singapore, and people still dress in that way. So there were certain characters who had, you know, outfits in that style and that color palette. The ceramics are very specific. And as a sidebar, I collect ceramics and I have a blog and I lecture about very specific type of ceramic. Check out my blog. You'll see hundreds and hundreds. I have the world's largest collection of these repaired ceramics. So anyway, so it was exciting to discover this new world of the Peranakin style. But I had to learn really fast what it was and then incorporate that into my set design. So that was one of the many things I learned. I had 5 weeks prep and 1 week was spent on location scouts and another week was spent in meetings. And so I had just a few weeks to pull the entire movie together. And I'm in a foreign country without any of my people. I didn't have my assistants driving on the wrong side of the road, or the other side of the road, I should say. You know, everything.
Oh my God,
The blueprints and ground plans were done in metric, so I couldn't use my scale rule. All the tools that I use to do my job were different, or, you know, foreign, or just not available. So just everything down the line.
So you're basically saying it was a cakewalk.
Well, it was. I just threw myself at it and never worked so hard in my life, but thoroughly enjoyed it and met wonderful people. I got so lucky that my assistants, my crew, they were truly spectacular.
And now, on Crazy Rich Asians, you had 6 weeks to prep?
I had 5 weeks.
Five weeks.
6 weeks would have been luxurious. No, just 5 weeks.
If you wanted to sleep, maybe. Mm-hmm. So you had 5 weeks. Is that's not customary for a movie, is it?
5 weeks is not customary for a movie. 5 weeks, unfortunately, is customary now for a pilot, which is crazy because it's just not enough time to prepare everything. And when you consider that the last week is going to be meetings and tech scouts, that gives you 4 weeks. And the first 1 or 2 weeks, the designer is designing, so you don't even have anything to work with.
So this would mean if you've only got essentially 2 weeks to pull stuff together, does that dictate what's location and what's built?
No, I'm told what's location and what's built. I mean, I have no say in that at all. They tell me what the needs are, and I do it.
Got it.
If it's a location, well, there's pros and cons to location versus studio work. If I'm doing your kitchen on location, you've got appliances there, you've got windows there, you've got lights there, you've got things there that we can hopefully use. If you're building it, I've got to find everything in the room. I mean, they will build the four walls, but not only am I doing all the appliances, the countertop, the cabinets, the hardware, the flooring.
You've got to design the kitchen.
Right.
And it's not just finding knobs and paint. It's period specific. And
find the right knobs.
Right. So there had to be some limitations for things you could and couldn't do for Crazy Rich Asians.
They didn't want to use red roses until the party scene. So throughout the entire movie, there are actually no roses. We wanted more exotic flowers. So Okay. Even the color red isn't really used until the big final, the party scene.
Right. So. And is that a cultural thing? Is there a symbol?
One of the reasons the movie looks so amazing is because the director, Nelson, myself, we all just thought of things that hadn't been seen before. So, rather than going for the obvious, already we're representing a culture that hasn't really been seen much of or represented on the screen or in the world in general. And so we were able to tell that story, and we had, because it was almost a fantasy, we could make it larger than life. And because they're crazy rich,
I heard an incredible interview with Kevin Kwan, the author of the book. And of course, the people interviewing him were saying, oh, come on, that was so over the top. Were there any exaggerations? And he said, yeah, there was one. When the woman who's found out that her husband is having an affair goes and buys herself a pair of earrings, in the movie, the earrings were worth $1 million. In real life, they were actually $2 million.
Right.
So let's talk about the challenge of finding things that are, at that level of craziness.
Well, that's one of the challenges, because this was actually a very low budget movie.
Wow.
The budget for the movie was $30 million, and Mary Poppins came out the same year, and I think the budget for that was $180 million, $200 million, something like that, and from start to finish. So that's the difference. We had very little money and very little time, and we had to be creative.
But seriously, you were creative. I mean, it was you had me fooled. Crazy Rich Asians was this, sumptuous, rich, rich, rich environment. You had no money and no time. There've got to be some crazy stories that come with making that happen. Now, I noticed when I was watching the film, which, by the way, I just loved, absolutely loved. I thought it was just a delight. There's a stuffed tiger. Can you tell us about that tiger?
So that was scripted, and that was one thing that the director really wanted because it was a fun visual. And we, of course, first started looking for actual stuffed tigers to rent and couldn't find any.
You went to the stuffed tiger emporium and...
Well, if we were in New York, we could have,
Sure.
Or L.A., we would have found one probably. So then we discovered that it was an endangered animal, so we couldn't even... If we found one, we wouldn't have been able to import it. So we ended up having to make it, and my assistant had worked on the series Marco Polo and had some great resources in Asia and knew of a prop shop who could fabricate this using, fake fur, and we had to give them very specifics. So we have pictures of Nelson in the standing tiger position. So we sent it out, and my assistant, Lauren Richards, who's amazing. That was one of the things she did. She, from start to finish, she found the fabric. She, talked to the people and had it shipped. And we almost didn't get it in time because it was coming from China, I believe, from Hong Kong. And we had no time to do it. We had no money to do it. It was very expensive, but it was one thing we just had to do because it was very much, the fact that it's the first thing you brought up. So people do remember it.
Well, you know what? I'm actually so relieved to find out it wasn't a real tiger. I'm good with that. Okay, let's talk some more stories. So again, the low budget, no time, but you had to create a bachelor. There is a scene on a bachelor party on a barge.
So we created that with containers, shipping containers, over 200 of them stacked up, and we did there's a basketball court, there's a pool, there's motorcycles, a sushi bar.
So So it wasn't just beer pong in somebody's basement.
No, it was. I went on and on. It was all built, and we had, you know, designated crew just doing that because that was a movie unto itself.
Oh my God!
And they loved it so much they wanted to keep it and keep it as like a amusement park, but they couldn't, you know.
You mean they wanted to actually just use it as an amusement park in real life afterwards?
Yes. Because wow. It looked so great.
And that's the kind of stuff. I mean, it's an over-the-top movie. Talk to me about the airplane scenes. Now, you've mentioned already that everything you did, you had to do in Malaysia.
Yes.
That was not a plane. It was a set.
Yeah, we built that. So we built that in a studio. And so the first class chairs, those are massage chairs. We had to buy massage chairs and trick them out and make them look like reclining airplane seating. And
this is the magic of movie making, people.
Yeah. Everything was custom. So the carpeting, we had fabric printed. We had Nelson went home one night, came back and designed the beautiful logo. And so we had the napkins and things printed with the logo. Yeah, it came together, and the crew, they were working literally 24 hours a day around the clock to get that done. About working in Malaysia is the labor, they've got such great labor, and it's so much cheaper to work there that you can get things done like that quickly that you couldn't normally do, especially over here.
Also, again, you're in Malaysia, but you're creating scenes that actually happen in New York City. Talk to us about a few of those.
So we had to shoot the karaoke club in Malaysia, and we found a bar that was serviceable, but we had to – all the artwork on the walls was very specific to Malaysia, and also a lot of Bob Marley. So we had to take all that down and put up images of New York and things that would tie it in more to make you believe it was New York and not Malaysia. We had to build a little stage and lighting for the karaoke scene, and I had curtains made, again, that looked more like East Village, rough and tumbled place that college kids would go to. So, and then the tables and chairs, special stools, I mean, everything we had to find had to, have that New York flavor. Wow. And none of it was available locally, so we had just to find things that semi-worked and then reworked them a little bit. So, we found some rusty license plates. We found some, a lot of kitschy things that on the wall, all mixed together as a collage, they would work.
Where would you find the rusty license plates? Did you have to have them shipped over?
So the antique shops there were very high-end antique shops that had, beautiful, rusty true antiques. Then they had more vintagey places that had weird things like cash registers and radios and vintage things that were not American, but they didn't look Asian. Some of them were European, but they just had a funky look. So we used a lot of those things. It was funny to me that was a popular look. They were into motorcycles and, lots of 50s imagery from movies like James Dean and Marilyn Monroe and all the things that go with it, of movies of that time. So, yeah, it's like Rebel Without a Cause was a big thing, and it was curious, but we were able to make it work.
That's actually a really interesting amplification of the layering story that I keep hearing about from set decorators. By the way, I'm getting to know enough about movies to be dangerous, just saying. So when it comes to layering, when you have so little time and so little money, does that give, or do you just say, no, it's got to happen?
Oh, I have to do it. I mean, that's what tells the character. The last 10% that we put on the set tells the story. So if I'm doing a desktop, the mail, the pencils and the pencil cup, it can't be arbitrary. I hate when I see something that just looks like, it wasn't thought out. Everything has to be appropriate to tell the story. If it's a silent movie, you should be able to, the camera can span the room and you would know who lived there. So it's my job to do that, and I love the details. I mean, I thrive, when I have the time, the research and the time to actually do it, which is always. I make it a priority. So, yeah, it's all about the details.
Well, we have a few details of our own that we have to look after. So, audience, we're just going to ask you to hang tight. We will BRB. Hey, listeners. Are you a fan of finding fun film facts first? Do you celebrate celluloid superbity? Well, then I nominate you to support the sofa. Head on over to patreon.com/burningsofa, and that is exactly where you can choose to ignite, combust, or incinerate, and in return, you can expect, oh, I don't know, let's see, private premieres for upcoming episodes, opportunities to hobnob with our celebrities, and all kinds of super swag. So all kinds of reasons to go over to patreon.com/burningsofa and member up. All right, let's get back to Andrew Baseman, master set decorator, with whom we were on a wild ride, which is the making of Crazy Rich Asians. And man, it just gets better all the time. Let's go. Location versus build. Again, you're in Malaysia. You have no time. You have no money. There have got to be some instances where choices had to be made. And what happened? For instance, there's a party scene that I could have sworn was a location.
Well, the party scene, we had to find a house big enough and grand enough to suggest the wealthiest family in Malaysia. Yep. So we found a derelict hotel that had been abandoned for about 15 years, and it had monkeys living in it. It was totally trashed. And that was good for the main portion of the house. So the entryway, that famous scene with the entryway and with the tiger, and then the living room with the party and the camera follows them throughout the room, that we shot there, and we had very little time, surprise, surprise, to pull that all together. I have some wonderful before and after shots of the way it looked when we found it, and then after we dressed it with the wallpaper and the crystal details and, you know, all the lavish things we brought in. It's pretty shocking, the comparison. But that was only good for a couple rooms. We had to shoot Nick's bedroom. So we shot that in another building on the same property and converted that into a bedroom. And then the kitchen.
With or without the monkeys?
No, the monkeys were gone by then. The kitchen where the mother is there's a wonderful scene of the food prep where the mother goes in and meets the girlfriend. It's kind of a tense scene. But that we couldn't find a kitchen big enough. So we built that from scratch in a museum in Malaysia, in downtown Malaysia, in Kuala Lumpur. So we had to build the counter, the cabinets, the stove. And since it was a functional museum, we only had a couple days to do all that. And then the exterior was done on the property of the mansion, but there was no conservatory. So that beautiful conservatory with the blooming flower where they all go out at the end of the party scene with the chairs, that we built from scratch. So Nelson designed that. And we incorporated some antique panels, some screens, some antiques, but it was all built. You know, the floor was a very specific Pranikin tile that was.
Well, good news, you had an expert on it. You.
So that was manufactured. We needed some murals on the wall, and so Nelson went home, didn't sleep, and designed these spectacular collage murals that were then printed and then painted over the next day.
That is a wild ride.
I had just a couple days to dress that entire set, and we had some incredible greensmen from New Zealand who brought in some incredible plants. So because that entire scene is about this rare plant.
Sorry, the name of that position is greensman? That's a special...
Greensperson.
Oh, sorry, of course.
Yes. and so I worked with a wonderful florist too, Eunice, who had never done a movie before. Now we became good friends, and she was so lovely. She was especially thrilled that I liked to eat so much. I loved the local food, and so she would make sure I was well fed, and that was one of the things. We would always go. Yeah, I would go over there, look at the flowers, and then she'd take me somewhere some wonderful place for lunch. So I actually lost weight because I was sweating so much, but I was eating very well. The perfect combination.
Thank you, Eunice.
Yes. So she created the plant that blooms, and it was, some of it was animation, some of it was silk. She made these beautiful detailed silk flowers, and then the plant itself was live. So just like the three elements in one little scene, that's, you know, typical in our industry, and hopefully no one notices.
Well,
so that was
or appreciate them
the
at least.
Interior, the exterior, the kitchen, and the bedroom, four different locations and two different builds, all for one location in the story. So that's part of movie magic. You walk out of one room, and then the camera goes, you know, half mile away, shoot something else, and then the actress enters, and it looks like it's, you know, all in one.
You know what? Actually, I would love to talk about food, because food is a character in this movie.
Yes.
Talk to
us. It begins right away with when they land in Singapore. They go to the food court, and that's a very famous scene where it's all the vendors and chairs, and they're sampling everything. So on the tech scout, we went there because that's where we're shooting it, and that was one of my favorite scenes because we got to have our crew lunch there, and it was amazing. So it was all the things that they're trying were all made there. And we sampled them, and it was, you know, just exquisite.
Yes. So talk about local immersion.
So, yeah, that was a bonus that the food was so good there.
Now, in fact, the wedding has – there's food plays a giant role there, too.
Yes.
That decorators are responsible for that, right?
Well, in this – it depends. One thing that people don't realize is – making a movie in New York versus LA, the decorator has a different responsibility for some items.
I didn't know that.
Working overseas, it's different again. Working in London versus Italy, different again. So in this case, the property department, prop master was dealing with the food, and there was a food stylist, especially because it was such specific food. And I was involved, Nelson and I were involved, specifically with the New York scene, the tea shop, because we wanted it to be like a Magnolia Bakery. We wanted cupcakes and colorful icing, and that was – they had no idea what that was. It never translated to that part of the world. So when we were describing cupcakes with thick icing and red velvet cake and bagels, there are no bagels in Malaysia. So all of those things we worked with a really wonderful food stylist and with our wonderful prop master who we all worked together and created those things. And if you look at the movie again, you see that scene where they're at the tea shop, the cakes are a bit bright. There's like blue cake and orange. It's a bit much, but because it's a movie and because it's, you know, sort of a fantasy, I think we got away with it.
Did you get to eat the food afterwards?
It was delicious, yes.
Well, I'm having food envy. Let's talk about your crew. Apparently, they were pretty amazing.
Yeah, so my crew there, I was so lucky to have a local crew. A lot of them had worked together on Marco Polo, the Netflix series. They had just finished that. And as a matter of fact, they were having a big sale and selling a lot of the props and set dressing, and we were able to get some of the pieces from that, because that takes place in, I forget what, you know, 12th century or something crazy like that.
So they had a Marco Polo fire sale?
Well, not really, but we did get some lovely things, some, you know, carpets and furniture and lighting, and so my crew had great resources. They were tireless. They never complained, unlike me, and they were so lovely. I mean, I'm in touch with so many of them, and it just makes me sad that I can't work with them more regularly. We're hoping to work together again on Crazy Rich Asians 2 and 3.
Oh, hey, let's talk about Crazy Rich Asians 2.
Well, there's not much I can say because I don't know where we are with it. I would love to tell you that I'm going over soon. We're supposed to be there now doing it, but for a variety of reasons, we were not. But as soon as we get the green light, hopefully as many of us can, you know, reassemble and do them. Before the movie was made, most of the people in that were not as famous as they are now.
I understand that the search for the male lead in Crazy Rich Asians, that was quite a process.
It was definitely. It turned into the modern equivalent to the search for Scarlett O'Hara in Gone with the Wind. I think every Asian male actor of a certain age was interviewed and considered for the role. But up until a couple of weeks from shooting, we still didn't have the lead actor. So I believe our accountant, Lisa Kim, who's this lovely, lovely woman who is obsessed with Hello Kitty, but that's another story. She suggested to John Chu, our director, and the producers that that they should take a look at this this Henry Golding fellow who was not an actor but was on TV as a host, sort of like the Ryan Seacrest of Singapore, I guess. And they brought him in. They saw what they liked, as did we, and he ended up getting the job. So. Yay, Lisa Kim.
And wow. And he was a host. He was not an
yes,
actor.
Yes, no acting experience at all. But
wow.
You know, those of you who have seen the movie, he's a natural. He has wonderful screen presence.
There were so many scenes that were so grand and so off the hook, over the top. How much of that was real and how much was CG?
I would say most of it was real. So there's a sweeping scene of the Tyrosol Park party where you see the house and you see the pavilion and then you see lakes and forest. The lakes were added. The forest was added, but the house was there. We built the pavilion. It was tied together digitally, but that was there. The party at the end, the wedding party, that was all there. That was not enhanced. We built that. We had seating for, I think, you know, 500. We created all that. So that was real.
Then did you have 500 actors in there?
Yes, extras, yeah. With the water feature, that was all real. We did that in one take. I believe they were ready to do another take, but got all that the first time, and no one had ever done that before. So again,
I'm curious about that. They were ready. You were ready to do it in more than one take. How do you prepare for that?
I believe they had two takes. So because it's water, you have to, you know, drain the trough and clean it all up. And, you know, so I wasn't there for the shoot because it was in the middle of the night. We had like one day to shoot that entire scene and one day to dress it.
Well, at this point, I'm thinking one day is a luxurious timeline.
Yes.
When you finally saw everything on camera, did you say, yeah, we nailed it?
It really took my breath away. I was not prepared. I thought, you know, I'll spend a few months in Malaysia. It'll be an amazing experience. I'll meet some nice people. Hopefully I won't die of sunstroke. And I'd never been to a sneak preview before, but they were selling tickets for the day before it opened that were selling out. It became this thing. Word got out. And so I went to this preview, and it started, and just immediately the soundtrack and the color and the opening titles, and I just couldn't believe it because we were making a low-budget movie halfway across the world, and it turned into this just beautiful, beautiful movie that was very moving and funny and colorful and exciting. And most importantly, it was representing people that hadn't really been seen or heard before. So it was so exciting to be a part of that. And then when it came out and got such great reviews, and then people were seeing it more than once. I had never been a part of something like that before. Mm. And then the icing on the cake was it got recognized by, you know, a lot of people in the industry, and there were, you know, it got quite a few nominations for various things, and coming together again with the cast and crew, it was just so wonderful to see them again and to be a part of that.
Andrew, thank you so much for joining us today. It's just a ton of fun, and I can hardly wait to have you back next week.
Oh, well, my pleasure. I had a great time, and I'm looking forward to another round of this.
Well, that's just great to hear. Next week, we are going to speak with Mr. Baseman again. Only next week, we're going to talk about other groovy accomplishments of his, like Mindhunter, Gotham, Trial of the Chicago 7, In the Heights, Oh, the Stories. Now, if you get lonely in between shows, don't you worry. We are here for you on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. We are at Burning Sofa Pod. P.S. If you love a good makeover story, you are going to love what you see there. Those sets for Crazy Rich Asians didn't just dress themselves. Check out the photos to see what they were before and what they became. This is Betsy D saying so long, stay safe on the sofa, see you next week.